the football club have played there for 135 years. Back in 2010, where I followed the club for a season and got access to, you know, all the behind the scenes. And I wrote a book about it called Dripping Yarns. And that's what sort of made me fall in love with the club. The whole town got behind the club, and there was crowds of, regular crowds of 2,000, 2,500 people, which, considering the size of Lewis, it essentially meant about one in every seven people who lived in Lewis was coming to the football ground, which was fantastic. So we were quite innovative with the way in which we were advertising games. Social media meant that they could go global. Can't wait for a day to see Lewis play Brighton in a local derby, which is, you know, so many fans can come and watch. Because the more partners we have on board, the more amplified our messages become. We always liked the idea of being much wider than just a Lewis thing. And we felt we had a story to tell.
Welcome everyone. Today on Pack Talks with VJCV, we have got Stuart Fuller, the chairman of Lewis FC, a 136-year-old football club from Sussex, United Kingdom. The club has been doing some great work, especially around football. They have been nicknamed as Equality FC for the work that they have been doing around the last 3 years for the men's and women's team. It's a small town with around 17,000 people in that county, but doing amazing work around football. We will talk to Stuart and listen to the history of the club and what they have been doing currently and what are their future plans. Welcome, Stuart, to the show.
Hi, hey, Vijay. How are you doing?
So, Stuart, thank you once again for coming on this show. It's a great story of Lewis FC when I got to read about this. So I hope the listeners and the readers will also love this story. Just to give a background, if you can just talk about where the club started off. Because what I could understand is it's now 136-year-old club, and there is a history going back maybe to the 17th century as well. So if you can just quickly take us through that.
Sure. Yeah, so the club was formed in a local pub in Lewis. It was formed by a group of sportsmen who played cricket, and they wanted to play something outside of the cricket season. So they decided on football. There was a number of discussions about other sports, but they decided on football. And the local parish council at the time allowed them to use a plot of land that was affectionately known as the Dripping Pan. At the time, it was quite marshy area, and the ground gets its name from the monks that used to live in the priory at Lewis, who used to use the area to pan for salt. And so that's how that's rumored to be why the ground is called the Dripping Pan. And the football club have played there every single year. They've played there for 135 years. There's 1 year where they couldn't play there because the British Army used it as a store. But the club has played at that ground for the whole of its history. And really, the club didn't do anything. It was a small club. Lewis is a small town. For 100 plus years. It was a typical English non-league football club ground. It had a small wooden stand and then grass banks all around. And that was like that until 25, 30 years ago. And then a couple of local businessmen got involved. They were involved in the construction industry. So they started developing the ground. They also put some money into the club, and the club started to do well on the pitch, and it started to rise up the leagues. It reached the first round of the FA Cup in 2003. And they played away at Stoke City, who are now in the, the second level of English football. They had a very young manager over the next following years, and he was incredibly ambitious, and he took the team up through the leagues, which was brilliant. The whole town got behind the club, and there was crowds of regular crowds of 2,000, 2,500 people, which, considering the size of Lewis, it essentially meant about one in every seven people who lived in Lewis was coming to the football ground, which was fantastic. Unfortunately, a lot of the investment into the team was related to the owner who was involved in the construction industry. And around 2006, 2007 is when the construction industry really started to suffer because of the global financial crisis. And the chairman at the time, he did a fantastic job. He's still a great friend of the club, but he just could not support financially the club anymore. And so what happened was the team were promoted to the highest level of non-league football, which is the fifth division of English football. But it just didn't have the money to compete. So it came straight back down again. And unfortunately, you know, a lot of the liabilities were in place, and the club suffered massively financially. And so what then happened was the club came very close to non-existent at all. It received what we call winding up orders. So essentially petitions from the UK government in terms of unpaid tax, things like that. And it was only from the generosity of people associated with the club and local people. So yeah, thanks to the generosity of individuals, the club managed to survive. It really struggled on the pitch, really, really struggled. And that summer, so we're talking now 2011 or 2010, the club went into community ownership. So a group of six individuals put together a plan. The owner agreed to sell them the club for £1, and they took on all of the liabilities, and they created this community ownership model. And what they did at first is they asked for individuals to commit to becoming life owners of the club, and in exchange they would donate a minimum of £1,000, and that saved the club. And the following year, the club was relegated, so they were now going to be in the seventh level of English football. But the club then opened up its ownership model to anybody. So anybody anywhere in the world could buy one share in Lewis Football Club for approximately £30. And that gave everyone the opportunity to vote for the board of directors, to be at the AGM, and to take an active part in the club. And that was really successful. There was around 800 people joined the club. So we now had an ownership model of about 1,000 people. But what we said was that as a club, it was really important that we stabilized off the field before on the field. So the team didn't really, it wasn't really successful, the men's team. And two years later was relegated again. So we're now down at the eighth tier of English football. Around about the same time, the club started to really focus on its women's team, who were playing a very, very low level. In fact, the level they were playing at, players had to pay the club to play for them. But they were really successful. They were winning every single honour they could. And in 2014, 15, they became part of the club. So now the club had a men's team and a women's team. And the idea, that's when the ideas first started about equalising resources. So the club spent about 18 months looking at how we could financially pay both our teams equal amounts. And we were in a position to launch that in the summer of 2017, which we did. And that was under our Equality FC banner. And the idea behind that was we looked at partners who had similar values and similar beliefs, who were prepared to invest either time, resources, or financially into the club to help us grow the messaging. Interestingly, there was a lot of we had a lot of media attention. We had a lot of people who loved what we did. We had a lot of people who didn't like that idea and thought it was a silly idea and it would only lead to the dilution of the men's team. 12 months later, the men's team were promoted. First time in 10 years. So the year after we put this in place, we have our most successful season. And what we're also able to do during that time is make an application to join the new structure the FA is putting in place for women's football. And we made an application to join the Championship, which is the second tier. And that summer, the summer of 2018, we found out we'd been successful. And we were going to be joining the first ever Women's Championship alongside Tottenham Hotspur, Crystal Palace, Sheffield United, Aston Villa, and Manchester United. So that was an amazing feeling to think that, you know, a tiny little club like Lewis, we're going to be playing in the same league as Manchester United. So that following season, it was a tough season for us. It was our first season at that level. Probably the high point was the home game against Manchester United, where there was over 2,000 people in the ground watching that. And we gave them a really good game. We lost 2-0. But we survived that season, which was our prime aim, was not to finish bottom and be relegated, but we survived. And on the men's side, we were then now back at step seven. So our aim was to survive there, and we did really well. We were top at Christmas. And you know, we just had a lot of injuries after Christmas. We ended up finishing eighth, which is still a great season. So the last couple of years have really been about understanding what we can do to really drive the club forward. Off the pitch, our ownership model goes from strength to strength. We have something in the region of 1,700 owners now. We have every single one of our board, so there's 10 people on our board. Every single one is an elected person. So we have all been elected by the owners at some point or another. We all serve for 3-year terms and then we can be re-elected. We've now got some big commercial partners who believe in what we do and they've invested in the club. And we're now at a point where, you know, the last two seasons on the men's side have been severely disrupted because of COVID. Our women's season last year, we could only play two games in front of fans, but we still continued and we finished the season in fifth place in the league, just behind Liverpool, Sheffield United, Leicester City. Our highest position, and in fact, you know, our second to last home game, we beat Leicester City, who were champions and had won their last 12 games. So a fantastic result. And that's our highest ever finish. So there's a lot of planning going into next season. Next season is going to be a really big season for the club. On the men's side, we've just appointed a new management team who are highly respected at our level. And we will be looking for promotion. And our women's team, again, we want to be playing in the Super League within the next couple of years. So there's a lot of good things going on at the club. And obviously off the field, you know, our ethos is we have sort of two mantras. Our first is get big, get niche, or get out. So everything we do, we either want to be the biggest and the best, or we want to be the revolutionaries. We want to be the ones that are causing a new movement. And the second is that we want to be seen as exemplary on the biggest stage we can. So for us, that can mean fighting for equality in sport. It might mean that we are looking at ways in which we can promote any type of cause. You know, the FA Cup prize money, for instance, is something that we're really, really keen to try and look at how we equalise that. So, yeah, that's where we are as a club at the moment. Exciting times coming up. Obviously, the history has been really important to us, but we're very much focused on the future.
Amazing, Stuart. If I understand correctly, Lewis FC women's team actually took away the points from four championship teams this year. So how does the team really feel about it? And does all these female players who are, they would be working somewhere and coming to play, or are they full-time players? How does that actually work out?
So the women's team have really operated on a part-time basis. They would be considered to be semi-professional. And that's different from the men's side, because every single player has to be contracted to the club. So they would sign a contract just like a professional player, but they are able to go and work somewhere else as well. So many of the players are studying. Quite a few of them work within the sort of sports industry, whether it's at local schools or things like that. Up until now, they've trained three nights a week. So we have our own training facility. We have our own 3G pitch. We're building a gym there next to our ground. So we have some really good facilities, which incidentally, our community, our owners, helped fund that. So they would tend to train on a Tuesday, a Wednesday, and a Friday night, and then they play on a Sunday. Next season, we are moving to daytime training. So the team will train every weekday, 9 till 11, 11:30. As we want to try and move towards being a full-time team, because maybe four teams in our league are full-time already. So, you know, Liverpool are a full-time team. So we know that there are other teams in our league who are also moving towards being full-time. And whilst we know that we are a very good team and we have very good players, sometimes it's difficult to get the players you want because they want to be full-time and we can't offer them full-time. So we were lucky in a way that we signed a centre-forward in January called Ini Amatonga. And Ini actually works for the club. So that her job is she is the commercial manager for the club and she plays for the club. So we can't offer that to every player. It just works because of Ini's skill set. But the idea being is that if we are moving towards five times training a week, and we have our own gym facility, then we will attract players who have played at a higher level. And that's what we really need. Because one of the unfortunate products of Brexit means that it's much harder for us to bring players in from overseas. The criteria that you need to go through to get those players is really, really difficult. So whereas in the past we've been able to bring in some overseas players and so we have currently we have a New Zealand international, Katie Rood. Ini has played for Nigeria. We've got a number of players who have come from the US. It just means that we can't cast our net as wide as we want. So last season was, you know, that first season in the Championship was quite amazing because, you know, when you looked at the fixtures and you saw, you know, Manchester United at home and then Tottenham away and things like that, you know, you had to pinch yourself. And where we're at now is we're not intimidated, we're not overawed by anything. Now, we went to Liverpool a few weeks ago and we lost 2-0 to Liverpool. Yeah, it's just another game. We prepare for it exactly the same. We drew at home with Liverpool earlier on in the season. I think that part of it is also no crowds has made it a lot easier for in some instances because there's not that expectation, that intimidation from the crowd. That's made it a bit easier. But, I mean, we've played two Super League teams in the last two seasons. We played Arsenal and we played Chelsea. We lost 2-0 at Arsenal in the FA Cup and we lost 1-0 at home to Chelsea. So I think that we could play in the Super League. I think we'd need to, you know, two or three additions to the squad. But I think that we've got the capability and certainly we've got the mindset, we've got the preparation that we could go and play in the Super League.
Amazing. Because I'm a Chelsea FC fan and the way in which Emma has and the players have been going around with their business, knocking off every best possible team across the globe and playing against them and just letting them score one goal is like it's in itself a great achievement because the current format which they're at, they would be playing their Champions League final in the 10 days time and to play against them and just let them score one solitary goal is amazing. I was reading through some of your results of the women's team and looking at how things are going. If, as you correctly said, if you get at least two or three good players joining the club, then maybe definitely there is a possibility that you will start playing the Women's Super League in the next couple of years.
Yeah, I think that our team has a solid defence. We've always been very tight and that's a great thing. So normally, you know, the games we've lost, we'll normally, you know, normally lose by a goal. So it's quite unusual for us to lose by any more than one goal. And what changed is at Christmas, we brought in four new players and, you know, one was a centre forward, Innie. We have an absolutely fantastic winger, Lucy Ashford Clifford. And we have a centre midfielder, Molly Rouse, who is ex-England under-19s and just does that almost like that N'Golo Kanté role for Chelsea men. You know, she sits there and she just dictates the play and she breaks things up. And they've made a huge difference, not only within the squad off the pitch, but on the pitch, because we look like scoring when we go forward. And that's something that perhaps we've lacked a little bit in the past. And the fact that, you know, we'd got more points this season by, I think it was the end of October, than we had last season. You know, and we had this attitude that we were going into games thinking, you know, we'll win this, we can win this, rather than previously it would be like, well, we'll hope to get a draw here or we'll hope this. Completely different attitude. And that makes it really, really exciting going into next season because we'll take that attitude with us.
Talking about the Equality FC, to give a better clarity. If I understand or if I get my record straight, Lewis FC would be the only professional or semi-professional club across the globe who would be paying the equal salary for both men's and women's team.
As far as we are aware, yes.
Amazing. It's just not the salary that you're talking about. It's even the facilities. They get to share the same facilities. Because if you see across England itself, you can see that the women's team play in a different ground and men's team play in a different ground. Yes, they can afford to do that. Many teams cannot do that. But it's good to see that you are sharing the facilities and both the men's and women's team are getting the same facilities and other things around the club. It's going to be the same for them as well.
Yeah, it is. And I think that our view on this is not that we expect every club to do exactly the same. The women's game is building fantastically. And I think that, you know, next season, it will be stronger than ever. Then at the end of, you know, in a year's time, we have the European Championships year, which I think could be a real catalyst for the growth of the game. And, you know, I think what, you know, Chelsea and Man City, those two examples, what they've done in the women's game has been fantastic, because they've acquired the facilities. So you know, Chelsea have got what I would, you know, I know it to be Kingstonian's ground, but it went from Kingstonian to Wimbledon to now Chelsea. But, you know, they've completely changed that ground. You know, I saw the other day, every seat is blue and everything like that. And what they've done is they've created a home. So that is their home. It's nobody else's home. And Man City, the same with the Academy Stadium, you know, next to the Etihad. I think that's brilliant. I think it's really, really good. It does disappoint me when I see some clubs who are playing at stadiums that probably... I don't know whether... I think they should have better ambition. You know, I was quite disappointed, you know, the Liverpool play at Tranmere. Tranmere's a fantastic stadium. It's a great facility. But, you know, I'm sure there's more they could do. You know, Leicester City play at a lower level ground, despite the fact they've built this fantastic training centre and things like that. And it's, you know, Brighton, you know, we get on really well with Brighton, but Brighton don't play in Brighton. Brighton play 35 miles. In fact, you know, Lewis play closer to Brighton's ground than Brighton women do. And I'd love to see Brighton come back and play in the city, because it would boost the whole area. And, you know, I can't wait for a day to see Lewis play Brighton in a local derby, which is, you know, so many fans can come and watch. So, yeah, it is about the facilities. We share, the men's and women's facilities share. You know, everything is shared. The kit, the kit manufacturer, the sponsors, you know, the strength and conditioning, the data analysis. How we work is, you know, we're moving towards this, what we call centralized function. So in the middle of the club is this engine room, which is medical, strength and conditioning, tactical analysis. And those resources are shared. So there's a men's team manager, there's a women's team manager, but when they want specific, you know, medical facilities or medical resources, it's taken from the pool. And the idea is that over the next 5 years, which is our strategic aim, is all of the teams within the club, so right the way from our under 16s upwards, will play in the same way. And that's, you know, that's part of this ethos we have, which we call as quality winning football.
Superb, Stuart. And I hope you will be able to do that. Now, bringing to the ownership part. So now currently, because I was going through the numbers, and it's around 1,700 owners from 36 countries. So why the thought of opening up the ownership and how easily can one be an owner of the Lewis FC?
So we always like the idea of being much wider than just a Lewis thing. And we felt we had a story to tell. Initially, I think it really started through, we got our name. So when the club sort of became community owned, we really did a lot of work building the identity of the club back up. So one of the simplest things we did that was the most effective, I think, was we introduced match posters. So we were quite innovative with the way in which we were advertising games. Social media meant that they could go global. And so we had people who became, you know, Barcelona fan first, a Lewis fan second. And that then sort of channeled them into becoming owners. Likewise, a couple of us on the board traveled extensively for our work, because none of us are, all of us are volunteers who run the club. None of us are paid. It's completely voluntary. So we would go to places around the world, and you know, I would talk to people about Lewis, and we'd get owners from Lewis, and slowly but surely we built this global background. And as we've increased our footprint and what we're trying to do in the world, so too has our owner base. And this year has been brilliant, because what we've been able to do this year is stream our games. And so anyone can watch our games. You know, it's a voluntary donation that goes to the club, but no, you know, people haven't had to donate, but they get full 90 minutes of the game with commentary that they can watch anywhere in the world. And that has really been a tipping point for driving overseas owners. And then what we do now is we also have once a month, we have an owner's town hall where any owner can join. It's an hour session, and it will be on a particular topic. So this month it was about meeting the new managers, and anyone can come on, they can ask a question, they can talk to them. And again, the idea being is that we try and bring our owners as close to the club as possible. So our view is the owners, you know, we want to be the, our ambition in the next 18 months is to be the most owned football club in the United Kingdom, which we think currently is around 3,200, which is Exeter City in step three. And then our aim is, you know, we want 5,000 global owners. We want 10,000 global owners. We want Lewis to be everyone's favourite women's team around the globe. And, you know, that's our aim. We've got the people on board who can help happen, but it's all about word of mouth as well, and just trying to get people engaged and interested in what we're doing.
Great stuff, Stuart. Great thoughts in terms of how to take it to the next level and opening up the ownership. You added Indonesia and one more country in the recent month, I think, last month.
So far Indonesia is new. And South Korea, I think, is new as well.
Okay,
great.
How do I get to be an owner? So I pay close to around 30 to 40 pounds a year, or I can have an option of a life membership as well?
So yeah, so people can join, they can become a life owner for a donation of around £1,000. We have approximately 100 life owners. Or you can become just an annual owner, and you can sign up for that via the Lewis website, and you'll get your share certificate. You'll be in the weekly newsletters that come out. You'll get invites to club events, and you get to be part of, you know, the most radical football club in the world.
You were talking about the new managers, Tony and I think Josh, who have joined recently.
Yes.
And you have got great expectations, because I was reading some of the articles which are there in the social media, and people are already started talking about the new managers and how the men's team can shape up and start performing really well. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I've known Tony for a few years. I've always known him to be very driven, very ambitious. He's been incredibly successful, and part of the reason why he's been successful is because he's done things differently. So he's not your typical manager, and I think that where the club has been successful before is where we've employed those managers who want to do something differently. And Tony became available. His previous team were the best football playing team in our division, and he became available around the same time as we decided to part company with our previous manager. And We did a full interview process. We had over 150 people apply. We felt Tony and Joe were by far and away the best candidates. So they started with us 2 weeks ago. It seems like months already, because we've achieved so much, and it's great working with them because they have the passion and the energy, and they want to be successful, and that's their whole point. It's about, to them, it's about detail. It's about meticulous detail, those marginal gains, and it's an interesting, it's going to be a really interesting season, because a lot of people, when they saw that we had signed them, or could see that we were serious about next season. And I think that's going to be very interesting.
Talking about the sponsors that you have got, you have recently signed a sponsor and for a six-figure sum and all. In case now, since you have opened up ownership across the globe, in case some people are interested for sponsorship, how do they reach out to you? And we have still got some slots available for sponsorships?
Absolutely. So Lyle and Scott came on board as our prime sponsor in December. Lyle and Scott are a very traditional British clothing brand that is best known for golf. So they are a golf brand, and golf is a male-dominated sport. So they want to change their appeal, their market, their potential client base. And they saw what we were trying to do at Lewis as a perfect vehicle for that. They share a lot of the same values as us. So they were a fantastic partner to bring on board. And they've been brilliant so far. They've made a couple of films featuring the club. And, you know, they've put something really prominent on their website. Absolutely brilliant. But we're always looking at potential commercial partners to come in and help us and to work with us. And it's not always about money. It's about how brands can, the synergies between brands. Any brands that are out there that want to talk to us about opportunities can contact me initially, and I'll put them in the direction of the right people within the club. We have some big brands that are our partners. Kappa Sportswear are a fantastic partner for us, and they've been brilliant in the last couple of years. We work with Lucasaid, is another one, are a global partner of ours. And there's a number of local businesses, and also some other donors who wish to remain anonymous, which is, that's fantastic as well. So we're really lucky with the people we've got on board. We're actively trying to grow that, because the more partners we have on board, the more amplified our messages become, because we can leverage their networks to talk about our side of things. One interesting other area that we've got is we created a program of what we call sisterships. And these are organizations that have similar values to the football club, but aren't involved in football or even sport. And we work with them on how we can help them. And what it's been really good at is it's been introducing people to football who never felt that they should be at a football match. For some reason or another, they just didn't think it was, they would get enjoyment out of it. They didn't like the perception they had about football. And what we've been able to do is introduce them to football, either through women's games or through some of the men's games, which are, completely different to how they perceive football. And what we've also been able to do is work with them on certain projects. So, there's one particular organization that's based relatively locally that we are talking to them about some of their leadership training. So trying to introduce to them some of the concepts that our team captains use or our manager would use, so they can try and relate those as to how they could use them in the workplace. So again, we're using football as a lever for social change. And again, I think that's really important. We are a football club, but we're much more than a football club. And I think that's the power of what we do, is that we all realise that. Football is really important to us. Success is really important to us. But success can come in a number of ways. And we've not been massively hung up about winning leagues and winning cups. That's important and we want to do it, but it's not the be-all and end-all.
Superb, Stuart. I like the way you put it. Success can come in different forms. Definitely, when you start looking at the overall ecosystem of sports and what sports can do to the society and give back to the society, I think definitely success can come in different forms for sure. You also want to the football to grow in a grassroots level. So what exactly are you going to do, or what are you currently doing to help?
So we've been very limited by COVID because that has shut down everything. We have run academies previously, so 18 to 16 year olds, and we had to stop those. But the plan is to restart those from 2022. We have a number of junior sections as well below the age of 16. And we also do community sessions. So every Saturday morning, we do something called Rookie Kickers, and we've been able to do that remote, which has been great. So three of our women's first team players will do soccer skills aimed at sort of 5 and 6 year olds, and which we've been able to do via Zoom, which has been really good fun. But we're actually able to start doing those in person again. But they've been really successful because it gives the children the opportunity to learn skills, but also, you know, they're learning them from, you know, footballers who are playing almost the highest level of women's football. And that's been really, really fantastic as well.
And I can see the Rooks book right behind you. I'm not sure if the book or it's a magazine. yes, so great to see that. And you yourself have written a book, and you're writing another one almost ready to come out of step, if I'm not wrong, right?
Yes.
How did you come out? Yep.
So I've written 8 books. I first got involved in Lewis back in 2010, where I followed the club for a season and got access to, you know, all the behind the scenes, and I wrote a book about it called Dripping Yarns, and that's what sort of made me fall in love with the club. I mean, I'm not from Lewis. I'm in London. I live in London. But that made me fall in love with the non-league game and with Lewis, and so I've sort of carried on my writing over the years, really mainly focusing on football and culture overseas. But then when COVID hit in October, I realised that it was unlikely that the non-league football game would be the same ever again. So I tried to document what was going on. So the book Out of Step is due to be published in July, and it's a series of interviews and stories about the people behind the clubs. So it's about chairman, and it's about the manager, and it's about players, and the kit man, and the groundsman, and the physio, and it's stories from people that I know and people that I'd never met before, but I've now become great friends with because of the stories they've told. So I'm really looking forward to that coming out, because it's something, you know, very different. But I think it captures, because what will happen is in a year's time, if COVID has slipped into the background, whilst everyone says, I'll never take football for granted, or, you know, all those things, we know full well it will. People will change back to how they were. So what I wanted was a book that documented how football was. And what I do is I cover not only the roles within the club, but what was happening in football, especially non-league football, during the period from October to the end of March. So a sort of a 6-month period, but actually what happened. So it should be a good reading. I hope that, you know, in a year's time, 2 years' time, 5 years' time, we'll be able to look back and think, God, did that really happen? You know, did we really think like that? And hopefully we've seen change for the good.
I look forward to read that, Stuart. It will be an amazing read, because a lot goes behind, because what, as a global audience, what you can see is only the league games which happens, and maximum we could see a FA Cup game wherein a lower division club is coming and performing. Yeah. Other than that, we don't know what's happening with the smaller clubs and non-league games, what's going around, whether it's happening without the fans, and because a lot of the leagues got abandoned, and how the clubs are still surviving and moving around. So I will look forward to that. Should be a good read, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, funny enough, one of the stories in there is about Marine, who ended up playing Tottenham in the FA Cup. And, you know, I was speaking to them before they did the cup draw. So they didn't know, or actually before they won the second round game. So even then they were, you know, they were excited because of how far they got in the cup. And then to talk to them, and I spoke to their kit man, and their club person who runs their club shop in the run up to the Tottenham game. That was fantastic because you could see the excitement and feel the excitement talking to them about that one game.
Well, I remember watching that game. It was amazing. With people standing in their garden and watching the game with a beer in their hand, and the whole excitement of seeing Gareth Bale and Harry Kane coming to the pitch and playing, and it was a tough game. It was not easy. I think they stretched till the 80th minute. I think, if I'm not wrong, till the wherein Meniscus came and started scoring a couple of goals. I think then it opened up the game, but you could see more than the passion, the way in which they were enjoying that moment of playing a club like Spurs, coming to their ground, small ground, community ground, I would call that, because the way in which people were around that, it was amazing. And that's what football is all about, in terms of bridging that divide and bringing the clubs together, irrespective of the size of the clubs and the money that's there in the club, how we can actually bring them together. And I think smaller clubs, when they start bringing out interesting stories and start saying that, okay, we are also there in the football map, that's when I think people will start noticing and start following smaller clubs.
Yeah, I agree.
Great. So, Stuart, great talking to you. So, I hope and I wish all the best to Lewis FC, both men's and women's team. If I'm not wrong, one of your videos have been selected for BAFTA also. So, all the best for that. I'll put the links to your videos as well. I like a couple of videos which have been there on the social media platforms. Great work by the team. And all the best. Look forward to the next couple of seasons. And hope to see Lewis FC Women's Team play Chelsea FC Women's Team.
Good stuff. Thanks, Vijay.